Welcome, everyone, to episode 411 of the NBA podcast. Today, we are going to spend an hour discussing Oprah Winfrey's interview of Harry and Meghan. So, hope you're excited for that. No, we're talking NBA. We are talking the second half of the season starts tomorrow on Wednesday. So, we're going to talk about the teams we are most excited to watch in these next couple months. And we can take that interpretation in a number of different ways, as you'll soon see in this episode. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed. Engage with us in real time or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is someone who is avoiding, like the plague, any spoilers for the 4 hours Justice League movie, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well. And now that you said that, I definitely can't look in the comments on this room at all, because some people might be trolling. No, and you know what? We are part of a chat group with like 30 plus people, and we have our very own Tom Holland in that group. I'm not going to say who it is, but we have a guy who is like a specialized spoiler. And the thing is, he does it unintentionally every single time. So today, when he started spoiling without really thinking about it, I had to tell him to... Well, basically, shut the F up. So,
right.
Shout out well, to the spoiler that I'm going to call him that from here on out.
Well, on the bright side, you only have like a week more to go before you could just
9 days
sleep peacefully again.
Nine days. And you know there what? You I even entered a competition at HBO because they said that if you win this competition, you can see the movie on the 13th instead, like 5 days early. I'm that desperate. Wow. I entered, and it was on Facebook, and the question was, like, which character do you look forward to watching the most and why? And I was like, Batman, obviously. I named my children respectively Bruce and Wayne. Like, how can So I'm at that point now where if I don't win, the game is rigged, okay?
You're the only person who's competing to see a 4-hour Justice League movie 5 days early, so I think you're good there.
Sir, I will have you know that there are several hundred entries to that competition.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, wow.
In Denmark, remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Mort. So, second half of the season is starting tomorrow. So, these are teams that, for whatever reason, we can explain our rationale as we go through these teams that we are most excited to watch. You said your first team is going to come as a surprise to me. So, I'm not even going to try to venture a guess. Who is the team, this mystery team?
It's a team that's done a lot better recently, but that still has a lot of overarching questions and like doubts and whatnot. So I think just by saying that first thing, I think I gave you a big enough hint that you kind of know where I'm going here.
There are three teams that I could guess from that clue, but I'm guessing you will take Dallas instead of Miami, and Toronto fit the bill as well, I would argue.
They do.
I'm guessing you're going Dallas.
I'm going Dallas. I really am. So I don't think they're going to return to the norm that they had last year. Full disclosure, I understand that Dallas fans are getting more and more optimistic. That's great. I'm there as well. But I do think ultimately not having Seth Curry is just such a huge loss. I'm still a little bit skeptical. Josh Richardson, the last time we spoke, we made a little bit of fun about his three-point field goal percentage that was at 30%. It somehow got worse since then, Brian. So there are a couple of things that needs to be... given a harsh look, but I think Luka is kind of hitting his stride now. I think he's now grown accustomed to the current iteration of the roster. I still think Tim Hardaway Jr. is doing a good job. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do here in the second half of the year. I mean, look, I think our MVP chatter with Luka is mostly dead because of their lack of results. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not because of a lack of individual performance, if you catch my drift. Like, he's 29, 8.5 rebounds, 9 assists. like 36 from 3. I just don't think it's because of him that they haven't lived up to expectations. I think this was a roster that just didn't necessarily fit all that well together. But somehow, some way, over the past couple of weeks, it's kind of working, even though it's on paper not a roster that meshes well. So color me intrigued, Brian.
I totally agree. I was considering them. They're in my honorable mentions as well. I bumped them down a bit, in part because we talked so much about them already this season.
Yeah.
And, you know, we brought up the Kristaps Porzingis rumors a few episodes ago when Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report had that piece. So, you know, I think we both settled at the time that we don't think they're actually going to move him, but that is just something of intrigue to watch over these next couple weeks before the March 25th trade deadline, in case something drastic changes on that front. They do have the expirings of Tim Hardaway Jr., James Johnson to dangle as, you know, if they're looking to make a big upgrade. Josh Richardson, who you mentioned, he has a $11.6 million player option, which I would very much assume he's going to decline. So we'll see what happens there as well. Like, they could be one of the sneaky big splash teams at the deadline. I don't know that they will be, because I don't know that there's a big splash to be made if, you know, Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine aren't on the market. And I don't think they would go after Kyle Lowry, but
no. That's not a slight on Lowry. It's just the age. Like, you have to find someone who fits with Luka long term, and Kyle isn't that. Like, for the now, like for the right now, Kyle and Luka would be fantastic. The question is, would that pairing look fantastic a year from now or 2 years from now? Probably not.
Right. And Kyle Lowry is also going to be a free agent this summer. So what's their incentive if they're not in a win now window, which they are not? Why are they trading for a 35-year-old point guard? There are other teams who we'll mention, I'm sure, later in the episode who will be after Kyle Lowry. I don't think the Mavericks are one of them. But I'm intrigued both from an on-court perspective, because you're right, heading into the All-Star break, they had won 9 of 11 games. Like, they were 9-14 at the beginning of February, on February 4th. They've now gotten two games over 500. A lot of these wins came against the Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans, but they did beat Brooklyn, they beat Boston, so they've beaten some good teams in that mix as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, look, if they're in the play-in tournament, I mean, some good teams in both conferences are going to be in the play-in tournament, so that race for the number 6 seed is really important. They're two games back of the Denver Nuggets for now. I'm really intrigued in both conferences to see how that 4-5-6-7-8 mix shakes out.
Can I give you some numbers for Dallas, by the way, which are
please do
absurdly bad, but that's part of the intrigue because they're two games over 500 when they really shouldn't be. So in three-point field goal percentage, they're 25th. In rebounding, like overall rebounding, they're 24th. In assist, they're 26th. Steals, 29th. And blocks, 20th. Like, that's collectively super bad. Like, that's pitiful. Yet here we are, two games over 500. And I understand they've been feasting on bad teams, but even so, that means you're overcoming at least a couple of things working against you on the regular. So what if they make a move or two at the trade deadline that shores up some of that? Maybe they get someone in who can actually steal the basketball. Mm-hmm. And turn that thing into a positive. Then what? Like, I just think this team has a ceiling, maybe not this year's iteration, but I do think that they have some long-term ceiling that could be super interesting. And also Jalen Brunson, by the way, shout out. He's been really good this year.
He has been. I'm going to reference this a lot throughout this episode. So positiveresidual.com has strength of schedule of games played and strength of schedule remaining. Strength of schedule games played. The Mavericks have played the hardest schedule in the NBA. Games remaining, they have the fifth easiest schedule. So don't be surprised if they make a surge up the standings in the second half.
Oh, Luka might win MVP then.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far, but he could get back into the race for sure.
Hey, we had him before the year. Are you just jumping off because your boy Joel Embiid is ready?
No, I mean, I wrote something at Forbes today about Embiid and Jokic. Like, we talked, you know, we did midseason awards last episode. So, if you want 20 minutes of MVP discussion, you can go there or check out this piece. But those two guys, it's not even. I mean, there are other deserving candidates. Giannis, LeBron, Luka, Dame, Steph. They're all of these guys should be in the mix. Embiid and Jokic should be the two favorites. I still can't figure out why odds makers have LeBron ahead of Jokic, because Jokic right now has the ninth highest PER of all time. if the Nuggets were the 3 seed instead of the 6 seed, Jokic should be the Vegas MVP favorite by far. Like, what he is doing is otherworldly. And the same goes for Embiid. Embiid's setting career highs in basically every single category. He's currently on pace to be the 11th player in NBA history to average 30 and 10 in a season. No one's done it on his shooting splits. So, like, with all due respect to Luka, who's playing really well, but he hasn't taken a gigantic leap in terms of production. Efficiency, yes, but per-game production, no. Whereas Jokic had never scored more than 20 or so in a season. He's up to 27 now. You know, Embiid is more efficient and setting career highs across the board. I think it's Embiid or Jokic. I don't know. I don't see anyone else catching up. Maybe Giannis, if anyone.
Yeah. No, and then the voter fatigue comes in with Giannis. But by the way, Can we just take a brief detour? Voter fatigue is such a crock. It should just go to the most deserving player, and I don't care if it's fatigue. That's just the laziest excuse ever, I think.
I agree, but even based on it, remove the fatigue narrative from the equation, and most metrics still have Embiid and Jokic 1 and 2 in some order.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, generally speaking, there's still half a season to go. Like, right. In the second half of the year, if Giannis averages 35 and 17, you know, he's going to even the scales a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. That should not be disqualifying. What he did in the playoffs the last 2 years should not be disqualifying. Voter fatigue should not be disqualifying. It's just that, you know, Embiid and Jokic are legitimately having historic seasons and deserve their place as front runners right now. But I hope Luka has a second half of the season that puts him in that mix too. Like, I love MVP races that are actually contentious and, you know, aren't just like, which of these sort of impressive guys are we choosing between? It's like, which of these all-time historic great seasons are we choosing between? That's right. What this year's race is shaping up to be.
Indeed.
So my first team will come as no surprise to you, I think, Mort. The Brooklyn Nets, I think, are the number one team to watch coming into the second half of the season. They added Blake Griffin on Monday. What do you think of the Blake Griffin addition? Because I've been surprised by the reaction to it.
So I think it's going to be fine. Like, I think Woj reported that they're going to use him as a small ball center off the bench. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that. That's fine. I don't think he's the Blake Griffin of old. I've been pretty surprised at the amount of people who are like, oh my God, what a star team they now have. Like, no, they had the star team before. Blake Griffin, you know, in the year 2021 is not Blake Griffin of, you know, 2012 or whenever he was a beast. He is a vastly different player. What I will say is he's got some fundamentals to his game that are very beneficial to, or should be very beneficial to, the Brooklyn Nets. He can pass the ball. He can shoot the ball. He's actually a pretty good ball handler for someone his size. So you can even have him initiate the plays and dribble the ball up the court for the second unit. Like, there is some flexibility offensively there for him, but he's not like a superb athlete anymore, nor is he projected to be a great defender. Like, he was actually, like, his trajectory was upwards when he was a little bit younger defensively. Like, he got better year in and year in out, and then the injuries hit, and you could just see he didn't really have the movement anymore. So I don't think he's going to be an asset defensively. But off the bench, from an offensive perspective, I could see it. I could absolutely see it. Come in, get some boards, get a couple threes. I was about to say get a dunk, but apparently he can't do that anymore.
Didn't you see the practice video? He still can. He just hasn't in an NBA game for a
while. I have not, admittedly. Mm-hmm. I have not. But I probably should, because then I'll go batshit like everyone else. Because, oh my God, Blake Griffin dunked.
Right. Well, he is still capable of dunking. He is physically capable. I can't believe a 6'10 guy could still dunk a basketball, but
no,
he
but
can.
It's a good joke. When was the last time he dunked? That was last season, right?
Yeah, I think it was, I believe so.
Yeah, no, it's just a joke. I don't think anyone should take that seriously at all. Obviously, he can still dunk, but I do think it's fair to say that he's not the same athlete that he used to be. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious as well if you watch him play.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall sentiment seems to be like, how is this guy going to help at all? And I'm surprised by that because it's not like they're going to play Blake Griffin 35 minutes a night or ask him to be the number one option on this team. You know, he's playing next to James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving. At best, he's going to be the number four. And when you've got Joe Harris there, there are just so many other guys drawing attention away from him that they're going to ask him to play like a Chris Humphreys role, except he's Blake Griffin. He's still a very talented player despite his physical limitations. So putting him in a role where he plays 10 or 15 minutes a game off the bench and probably plays with James Harden in those minutes, I think he's going to be impactful. No, he's not going to be great defensively, but they don't care about that. They just want to be passable defensively, average defensively. That is okay. They have no aspirations of being a top five defensive team. They know their team is built on offense. Blake Griffin can still score the ball. Adding that to the mix with all of these other super elite isolation scorers, I don't know, man. I don't see this hurting them to the extent that, like, the Twitter reaction just seemed to be like, who cares? This does nothing for them. Like, it might, maybe, but I think it's probably going to help them a little bit in certain matchups. And if it doesn't, fine, they won't play him. Like, he signed a one-year minimum deal. It's like they have no obligation to play him heavy minutes. If he's getting his pants beaten off in a certain playoff series, cool. Take a seat and save it up for the next series.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'll throw a different name out there, though, because you made the Chris Humphreys comparison, which was, I see what you did there. Thaddeus Young.
Yeah.
Like, because Griffin, from a passing perspective,
is
a really good passer.
Yep.
Granted, he won't be the same defender, I don't think, but he's still a wide body who offensively can score near the basket, I have to assume. I'm really not taking into account his current stats from this year, granted. I just think he was mentally checked out. But he can make the passes, he can be a rebounder, so I think he's a guy who can come in off the bench and provide you with some all-around game, which I think they would need from the secondary position, because they seem to be very top-heavy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, I mean, the number one reason I'm excited to watch this team in the second half of the season is because we haven't seen them at full strength that often. Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving have played 7 games together through the first half of the year. So we, as good as the Nets have been, like, they were won 10 of 11 coming into the All-Star break. They're only a half game behind the Sixers for the number one seed in the East. I think they're going to take that pretty easily and run away with it. We still don't really have a good sense of how good this team can be. And I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'm horrified to find out. But, I mean, you know, I also think it's going to influence a lot of what these other contenders do at the deadline. Like, I think a lot of these teams have to ask themselves, for the Sixers, like, okay, if we go add Bielitsa and George Hill, does that change the calculus on a Nets-Sixers playoff series? Or do we need to go take a swing on a guy like Kyle Lowry? Right. So, you know, I think it's the Nets loading up, getting Griffin for the minimum when they still have, I believe they have the disabled player exception from Dinwiddie. Yeah. I think they still have part of their taxpayer mid-level. You know, Drummond, if he gets bought out, sounds like he's between the Lakers and the Nets as well. So I don't think this is the full finalized version of the Nets. It seems like they're going to, you know, both them and the Lakers are going to continue cleaning up on the buyout market. But this Nets team is getting progressively scarier by the minute.
Yeah. I mean, it's offensively, I agree.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Who else is on your list, Mort?
So next up for me is a team that got laughed at after they disappointed last year. And that's the Clippers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I like the Clippers still. I'm not out of them. I don't think that they were a fake or whatever you want to call them. I do think they had some issues, obviously, mm-hmm. and they didn't live up to expectations. That's certainly fair. But are we going to sit here and in a serious tone argue that a team with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George is somehow a team we can disregard?
I wouldn't, no.
Exactly. So I'm not. And I'm... You know, I brought up Kawhi as an MVP candidate as well. I think he's there. I think he's that good. I think Paul George, as you have touched on so many times before, he's becoming, you know, the third member of the Splash Brothers in a sense, just on a different team. I mean, the guy is taking 7.8 triples per night and is hitting it at a 45% rate, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's just blatantly unfair. So when you have those two guys doing these things, it's that alone means that your ceiling is pretty damn high. And then you have the rest of the roster, like Nicholas Batum, as is back and looking like Batum of old to a certain extent. Marcus Morris is still a high volume and high efficiency 3-point shooter. Pat Bev is still Pat Bev. Ibaka has taken a bit of a step back, but that's also due to a lesser role, I think. Like, he's only playing 24 mm-hmm. minutes a game, but he's, in my personal opinion, still, I think he's better than Montrezl Harrell. I know that people disagree on that. I don't care. I think Ibaka is just more disciplined. I think he's a better defender by a lot, and I think he's mm-hmm. more reliable offensively because he can shoot. So I like Ibaka there in that role. They still have Lou Williams, even though he's begun showing his age. And here's the kicker for me. Everyone is down on Luke Kennard, and I get it. He hasn't played mm-hmm. to the ability that he can. But why are we basically disregarding him compared to, you know, considering what he's done in the past? That I don't get. I'm not there. I'm not going to go, oh, this is Luke Kennard is struggling. That means that's the new norm for him. Like, I think right. that's a super bad take. He can bounce back. He is too good of a pick and roll guy, too good of a shooter, not to bounce back to a certain extent. So I think that's something in there. And then the final thing here is Subac. I was hoping he would get more minutes. Yeah, you're laughing. You can laugh.
Always.
He's a good defender, man, and he's a good.
I know.
He's a good defender. He's super efficient. We're talking 66% from the field and over 82% from the free throw line, and like. Eventually, hopefully, that dude is going to see minutes. And if not, some team out there should be trying to steal him away. This is Jonas Valanciunas 2.0. Use it. But better defensively.
I just know if we're going to talk about the Clippers, Zubac is going to come up at some point, which makes me happy. But you're right. I mean, I feel like both the Clippers and the Bucks are... They were among the... probably the two title favorites with the Lakers last year. And because of their respective playoff disappointments, both teams are kind of getting overlooked this year. Mm-hmm. And because they're not, you know, the Bucks are third in the East, the Clippers are fourth in the West right now, a half game behind the Lakers. So I think it's like, oh, well, these teams aren't, you know, the best records in their respective conferences. So they're just disappointments and they're going to collapse in the playoffs again. And the Clippers, we have seen them blow some leads in the regular season, but that's just kind of the new NBA. Like, with teams shooting this many three-pointers, a 15 or 20-point lead isn't as safe as it once was. You just need to...
Or 50 at halftime.
Right, right. So that's part of it. But I agree. I mean, if you look at the roster in terms of once rotations shorten in the playoffs, once Kawhi and Paul George are playing closer to 37, 38 minutes, you know, there's only three guys on this team playing more than 25 minutes per game right now. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Nicholas Batum, who looked completely washed last year. So, yeah, as Ty Lue shortens the rotation, as Ibaka plays more, Lou Williams started slow, but he seemed to, you know, kind of settle back into a groove now that I'm sure it was an adjustment for him not having Montrezl. He and Montrezl had such good chemistry in the pick and roll. Getting rid of that was probably a big adjustment for him as well. But, yeah, that's a great shout. The Clippers are a great shout as a team to watch because it would not surprise me if we, you know, get to the Western Conference Finals and it's the battle for LA we all expected last year.
Yeah. And you know what? While I think the Lakers would win it, and I do think they would, I'm not ruling out an upset in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are multiple teams in either conference that could win that respective conference.
Yeah.
Like, I think there are teams that should be the favorite, but there are at least three or four teams in both conferences where if they won at the end, I would be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. I could see the path.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, for Batum is just such a good shout, going back to our Griffin discussion. Like, if you think Blake Griffin is washed, remember what Nicholas Batum looked like last year?
His
dreadful Hornets team where he clearly didn't care and they didn't want him to play, and you thought that was the end for him. It looked like he was going to...
You and I made Euro jokes.
Yeah, because he looked like he was heading that way. And now he's started every game, almost every game, for 35 of 38 games for one of the top teams of the Western Conference. And he's playing, he's shooting efficiently, he's playing well. It's, he's not averaging a ton of points because they don't need him to, but he's just filling that glue guy role extremely well. So, again, look at that to... Maybe Griffin does a smaller version of that off the bench for the Nets.
Yeah.
All right. So the next team on my list is the Indiana Pacers, who are outside of the playoff picture right now. They are 16-19. They are the 10th seed, so they would be in a play-in tournament against the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
One and done against the Bulls. It sounds like Caris LeVert is going to come back at some point in the second half of the season. So I'm just excited to see how he fits with this team, and honestly just grateful that he's healthy and okay after the cancer scare following the trade. But that was a big loss for them. They traded Victor Oladipo and thought they were getting Caris LeVert, who could probably replace a lot of what Victor Oladipo in terms of his production, and then they didn't have Caris LeVert for 2 months, and they've been without TJ Warren for most of the season. He's played four games this year. So they still have Sabonis, Brogdon, and Miles Turner, but they've been kind of overextended. Some of their more complementary guys have had to pick up more of a scoring load that they aren't necessarily well-equipped to do.
Dougie McBucket's a career year, baby.
Yeah. And TJ McConnell, triple-double off the bench.
With 10 steals. Yeah, that was huge.
It's the most quintessential TJ McConnell game of all time. It made me so happy.
Yeah.
But, you add LeVert to this mix, and I don't know what the status is of Warren. It sounds like he's still a couple months away, so I don't know if he's going to be back by the playoffs. Hopefully he is, and we get to finally see this full-strength Pacers team for, it feels like we've been saying that for years now. But even if he can't come back and LeVert can, I think that will kind of push everyone else down one rung in the offensive hierarchy, and it'll make... if LeVert, Brogdon, Sabonis are shouldering most of the offensive load, then guys like Justin Holiday, TJ McConnell can go back into their more complementary roles. You still have, as you said, Dougie McDermott. You still have Jeremy Lamb. So you have enough scorers at that point where, if the Pacers are the number 7 seed and whoever, Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, whoever ends up in that 2 seed, I would not be psyched about drawing this team in the first round.
No, of course not. They're scrappy. And you know what? Yeah. I would be even more afraid to meet them next year, presuming that they're healthy, everyone, at the same time for the first time in 50 years.
Right.
That would be nice. But no, I definitely agree with you. It sounds so cliche, but the Pacers just play hard, if you catch my drift. They're not skirting off of just talent, and I'm not suggesting a team like Brooklyn is doing that, but they can. Sometimes teams with great levels of talent, they have a tendency to just say, oh, we'll win this automatically, and sometimes they will, to be fair. But the Pacers, we don't have, the Durant and the Harden and the Irving, and we don't have a LeBron. So we need to be superbly well-prepared. We need to play our asses off every single time. And they do, man. They really do. Domantas Sabonis was one of the hardest working big men in the entire league. I really appreciate their fight, and I think that's always scary for teams going against them in the playoffs, because they know You can't afford to have an off game. You cannot afford to have a game where you don't match that level of intensity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, for sure. I would hate to meet them, whoever I am.
And we would get more Caitlin Cooper Pacers breakdown, so it'd be a win for the basketball community as a whole.
The basketball world at large. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So who else is on your list, Mort?
So next up, and this is the first one that I have that is depending upon them making a move at the trade deadline. Now, Full disclosure, they're probably not going to, because Danny Ainge has already more or less alluded to the fact that they're waiting until the summer.
Yep.
That said, maybe a deal presents itself. And if it does, I have the Celtics. Let's assume for a second that the Sacramento Kings have a change of heart. And mm-hmm. they think, okay, Harrison Barnes, let's see what we can get for him. And the Celtics go, yep, let's grab Harrison Barnes. Let's do it. And they give up a pick and they give up a couple young guys, whatever. Then it becomes interesting, Brian. Then the Boston Celtics become a really, really interesting basketball team. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already seeing a lot of progress out of Robert Williams. We're seeing Kemba getting a little bit more of a stronger foothold on, the knee, no pun intended, and with Jalen and Jason being who they are, that's obviously a big boon. Then you have Marcus Smart returning. I could see that with Harrison Barnes, adding Harrison Barnes to that mix, that could be pretty dangerous, man.
They were on my list too, so I'm gonna have to go to one of my honorable mentions, but I'm totally with you for the exact same reason.
Yeah. Now, of course, if they don't make a move, who cares?
See, I'm not even there. I still think they could make noise even if they don't make a move. And maybe it's just because they have such a psychological stronghold over the Sixers in particular.
Yeah,
any team with Tatum and Brown, I'm not counting out. Like, Kemba getting healthy, as you said, if he rounds back into even some semblance of old Kemba form mm-hmm. by the playoffs, and getting Marcus Smart back, who I know we talked about recently as well, he's been a big loss for that team over the last couple weeks. Getting him back in the fold, much like the Pacers with LeVert, it's just going to make everything else fall back into order a little bit more.
Right. No, but I'm not. I wouldn't disregard them as being winners or competitors. I'm just saying I would be less interested personally in watching them if they didn't upgrade that roster, because I do think there is a significant drop-off from their primary guys to their secondary guys. And you could say, oh, well, that's true for most NBA teams. Sure, but this type of drop-off is really significant, I think. And that's one of the things that I think you need a Harrison Barnes to sort of bridge the gap a little bit.
Right. I mean, I think they were expecting more out of Jeff Teague and Tristan Thompson in particular.
Yes, yes.
And, Peyton Pritchard has been a nice surprise for them. And as you said, Time Lord has, he shows flashes at times, and you're like, oh, wow, this guy could really be something. But, yeah, they outside of their top four or five, it gets bleak pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Boston is – I'll go with a team – No, yeah, they were my one trade deadline surprise team in terms of not that that they're clearly shopping, but if they actually pull off a big move, these other teams are really just interested to see how they fit in the second half of the season, where they go from here. So yeah. The next team on my list is the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because we haven't really seen a full-strength Memphis Grizzlies team. Maybe this is my theme. It's just like, I want to see these teams actually. Brooklyn, we haven't seen full strength a ton. Indiana, we haven't seen full strength at all. Memphis, we have not seen full strength. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been out for the entire season. Jaren Jackson Jr.
What's the status?
He is making progress and is practicing on a limited basis. This was as of February 20th. So there's no timetable yet, but hopefully he's back at some point in the second half of the season. So, very not definitive, I know, but in the meantime,
I would be super I mean, sad on his part if he were to miss a whole NBA season. That's basically it. Yes, go on. Tell me. Yeah. Tell us about Memphis.
Well, in the meantime, Justice Winslow has come back. He's played 6 games so far. The efficiency is not there yet. Only 37.5 overall, 20% from three-point range, 60 from the free throw line. Not totally shocked there. I mean, he's never been a hyper-efficient guy to begin with, and also he hasn't played in a long time. He played 11 games last year. You know, this is almost like 2 years of rust that he needs to knock off. So I think in time he will improve. I don't think he's going to be a 37.5% shooter overall for the rest of his career. This year could be a little bit bumpy, but they acquired him knowing that it was going to be more of a long-term project. But seeing how he fits, you know, ideally with Jaren and Ja Morant, but in the meantime, just Ja Morant, Valanciunas, Brandon Clark, the rest of their young roster, seeing how he fits with those guys is just super fascinating. Because he, I don't want to put him on the level of a Michael Porter Jr., what Denver is, because he's not that talented compared to MPJ, with all due respect to Justice, but he does have that X factor where he could raise them another level if he gets back to, you know, what we saw during his peak in Memphis, like the point Justice. You know, if we get like a second unit of Tyus Jones and Justice just flamethrowing, that'd be super fun.
I would agree with that. I think that's a good pick. Plus, just the Ja Morant factor, as you brought up as well. Yeah. I mean, like, this guy can basically win you a game every single night if he wants to. He can really turn it on. What I'm hoping for him a little bit is growing that confidence in the second half of the year. I don't think it's fair to say, oh, we expected so much more out of him this year, because this NBA season has been wonky because of so many moving parts and bits. So I get it. I won't put that on his feet. But I was expecting him to just take over the scoring show, especially with Jaren Jackson Jr. out. I thought we'd be looking at a Ja Morant who right now would be averaging like 25, 26 points per game. But he's also super young, so I get it. But I do think the talent is there. I think the willingness is there. So maybe we're going to be seeing an entirely different Ja Morant in the second half of the year. I kind of hope so, because I want to see him like explore a little bit with his potential.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming into the All-Star break, he had back-to-back 35-point games. Right. So hopefully that bodes well for things to come. He had the 44-pointer in the season opener against San Antonio. I think, you know, he missed some time early in the year, and then he came back and didn't crack 20 until his 8th or 9th game back after that. So, I think that contributed to some of the, I don't want to call it disappointing averages. He also has a 6-point game in there, and their 49-point massacre of the Houston Rockets. So
yeah, no, I'm not disappointed at him at all. It was just a matter of like expectation, and maybe even putting too much expectation on a 21-year-old kid. So that's more on me than it is him for expecting that.
No, I totally hear what you're saying. I mean, he is just one of the most fun players to watch in the NBA baseline. And then, yes, you would expect with, you know, Jaren out for the entire season so far, Justice out for much of the season so far. You know, they have other guys, Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, who, my God, his shot selection sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying. I actually like Dylan Brooks. I'm not out on him. I'm just saying that, good God, like the amount of Kobe shots every single game? Are you kidding me?
Just allocate Dylan Brooks' 3 worst shots per game. Just make Ja take them, even if it's from the same spot on the floor. Yeah. I don't care. Just make Ja Morant be the one taking those shots.
Right. I mean, look, this is the thing with me about Brooks. If he just cut out those 3 shots, as you mentioned, per game, he would be a highly efficient NBA scorer.
Right. It's the Russell Westbrook phenomenon all over again. There's a lot of guys where that applies to, unfortunately.
That's true.
All right, who else do you have on your list?
So this is also a little bit more dependent on what they do at the trade deadline, or maybe if they get someone on the buyout market. This is a team we've also talked a lot about because they lost a lot of talent over the last calendar year. So you know where I'm going here. The Denver Nuggets, you know, of course you have Jokic and you have Jamal Murray, both of whom are basically carrying the Denver offense. And I understand that, that Denver fans aren't really too concerned, and that's great for them. I am. I have less faith in that. So look, powers to Nuggets fans. I got to give them this. So most fan bases, right, they just panic as soon as one guy misses a shot, right? Because it's like, oh, we suck. We're so bad. Like, you're a Philly fan. You know. I mean, you guys are so sensitive. If you guys have a bad game, you're like, yep, that we might as well just trade everyone and go straight to the lottery. We're horrible. Yeah. But Nuggets fans, I got to give them this. There is a really hardcore belief in their guys, even if they're going through certain things. Like, you know, I've said repeatedly that I think that they have, you know, gotten worse from a talent perspective. You have agreed with me. Yet the feedback we've gotten from that is, no, what are you talking about? You're crazy. It doesn't matter if we lost Malik Beasley. It doesn't matter if we lost Jeremy Grant. It doesn't matter if we lost Mason Plumlee. Whereas I'm like, yeah, it kind of does. But I appreciate like the support that they give their team, man. I applauds to Nuggets fans. I think what they're doing right now in trying to find the silver lining with everything is something we should all strive for more, because that's positive thinking and that matters. That said, it's not looking necessarily pretty in terms of the talent. Again, that's just my opinion. So flame at me, Nuggets fans. You're allowed to. I don't trust Michael Porter Jr. yet. I don't think Mike Malone does either. I don't trust that Gary Harris is going to return to the Gary Harris way that we know. I'm still a little bit unsure of what to make with Will Barton. Like, he had that really good year 2 years ago, then he had the really bad year a year ago, and now his games on an individual level seems to be fluctuating between last year and the year before, which, so there's really not a whole lot of consistency to be found there. Monte Morris has been really good, but it's not a guy you can like put in as a starter and ask him to go get you 20. He's just not that guy. Paul Millsap is 2,700 years old. That's not going to be, you know, someone you can count on for a lot of things. Like, his baseline play is great. Like, there is a baseline there. He can hit the three. He's a smart guy. He makes smart reads. Defensively, he's still like really solid. But ultimately, there's a ceiling on him. Jamichael Green is interesting, but it's in like, yeah, he's nice. You know what I mean? Like 9.6 rebounds, 43% from downtown. Like, that's good, but it's not going to blow me over. So if they go out at the trade deadline and, oh God, Nuggets fans are really going to hate me now. Like, let's say they go out in the trade deadline and they go, Nikola Jokic is at that age where he's entering his prime. And maybe next year the word is out on Michael Porter Jr. Maybe let's see what we could get for MPJ. Maybe let's see what's out there. Is there a trade to be made that makes us better both in the long term but also in the present by sacrificing the potential of Michael Porter Jr.? And look, I'm well aware that such a trade could come back and bite them in the ass. I am fully aware. That's definitely in my thinking as well. But if your coach doesn't trust him, and you have the best passing big man of all time, who's just entering his prime, and you have Jamal Murray, who's playing a career year, and hopefully this is the beginning of the new norm for him, don't you want someone, like your third wheel next to them, to be more reliable, ultimately?
So who is, I don't want to say the worst player who you would trade MPJ for, because that could take a while, but like, are we talking Bradley Beal, obviously they should include him for that. What if like the Bulls put Zach LaVine on the table?
No. The Bulls wouldn't do that. I'm speaking on behalf of the Bulls. Why would they do that?
Yeah, Zach LaVine plus whatever, Will Barton, Gary Harris, whatever filler you need to
Yeah, okay, but like, I don't even think there's a deal to be made there. Porter is their best asset. Like, they would have to be Porter and would have to be like myriad of picks, right?
Yeah. So are you talking someone like the Harrison Barnes tier?
Yeah, well more. Like, and that's actually funny you brought that up, because that was actually the name that I was going to bring up. And you, yes. So full disclosure, I have not gone in and done trade machines on this.
Sure.
But maybe something along the lines of a Harrison Barnes plus Marvin Bagley, and then you get Michael Porter, and I don't know if there's like, you take on a contract that does not great or whatever, and then that guy can bank some upside as well. It could be Gary Harris. I'm not really sure like the parameters of the deal, but overall, just an idea that floating could be like Michael Porter for a Barnes-Bagley combo, and then you kind of have to figure out on the margins in terms of salary matching how that works out. But I don't know if I'm off value-wise, because I think he's so hard to gauge. You know, Nuggets fans might listen to this and go, what the hell are you talking about? Michael Porter Jr. is not going to be sent off for Harrison Barnes and Marvin Bagley. Are you crazy? We want Bradley Beal for him. And I get that. And if the Wizards were inclined to say, you know what? We are willing to put Bradley Beal in the trade that includes Michael Porter, which I don't think so, because if the Bulls are disinclined to include Zach LaVine, why the hell would the Washington Wizards be inclined to include Bradley Beal in a deal for Michael Porter Jr.? But look, like, just get the best thing that you can. That's for someone, and get someone back who's reliable, who can be a third wheel, who can shoot, who can defend a little bit more. I don't think that should be like ignored if that option is out there. Plus, and I'm banging my drum on this, I just don't think it helps having a guy like Michael Porter Jr. as well, who is constantly in the media for all the wrong reasons. I don't think that's helping a team at all. And I understand that people are going to say, well, does that matter if you're looking at the production and the potential? Yes, I think it does. I ultimately think that if you are a distraction constantly for all the wrong reasons, and those reasons also make you less respected in the locker room, yes, I think it matters.
I am irrationally excited for Nuggets fans to listen to this, to get to the point where you pitch.
No, but do you disagree with anything I just said, though?
I don't disagree that they should be open to making a deal. I just think I want to be there in the room when Ryan Blackburn or TJ McBride hear a Barnes-Bagley package for MPJ.
No, look, that was just an example. Obviously, I know. If there's more to be had, you go that route. Like, I'm not saying Barnes and Bagley is the best that they can get, but I do think it's something that could realistically make them better immediately. That's my point here. If there's a better deal out there, of course, like, pursue that. My point is just, don't keep Michael Porter Jr. just to keep Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, they should be open. What you said, ultimately, where you're coming from is, Jokic is good enough to win now.
Yes.
They went to the Western Conference Finals last year. Jokic is having an MVP caliber season. Jamal Murray is, you know, really getting back to what we saw in the bubble. If he hits that level consistently, he's a legit number two option. Mm-hmm. They need more complementary help. You don't know. No, MPJ is just young, and he hasn't played that much. He's inconsistent. So you don't know what you're getting out of him every night. Jokic right now, this is coming from, again, my Forbes piece on the MVP race. He leads the league in PER, win shares per 48, box plus minus, value over replacement player. Like, he is having just completely dominant season. The PER, again, ranks 9th all-time. He's 10th all-time in single-season win shares per 48, 9th all-time in box plus minus. Like, historically great season from Jokic. And if they were third in the West instead of sixth, he would be the MVP favorite right now. I think it's that easy.
Yep. But let me ask you this, though. Just in terms of like the whole Barnes-Bagley thing, talent-wise, do you think it makes sense for the Nuggets to do that, or do you think it's just completely ridiculous considering the potential of Michael Porter Jr.? Your opinion.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm just not a super high believer in Bagley.
Yeah,
that's fair. Yeah, I that's where it is. I mean, if they were getting Barnes plus Halliburton, If it was like Barnes and Halliburton for Michael Porter and Gary Harris, then I think it's a more legit discussion.
Do you think Michael Porter Jr. has the trade value considering the media attention that he's getting as well?
I do. I don't think they're... Yeah, I think we're in a very insular bubble of, you know, we follow this stuff very closely. I don't think he gets a ton of media attention, honestly. Well, if he does, he could thank Myers Leonard for taking the heat off for a while.
Say that much. You told me wouldn't bring that up. No, you did.
We'll skim over
that
he finds himself in.
I like that you say that because I'm actually unsure. Like, that's why I was trying to temper expectations in a way by going Barnes-Bagley. Because I don't know. I agree with you that if we take every issue away, like, off the court, and we just look at Michael Porter Jr., the player, and Michael Porter Jr., the long-term prospect, yes, I would agree with you that they should fetch a bigger haul. But I just can't help but think, especially current, you know, in regards to the political climate and the coronavirus pandemic and the things that he seems to be standing for, I just have to believe at some level that teams are a little bit against that. But if not, if I am completely wrong on that, then yes, you are absolutely right. That changes what they can get back in return. That changes the entire outlook. And then Barnes and Bagley is a ridiculous notion. But what I think is interesting is where is his trade value? Because I also think the inconsistency matters. It also matters that after this year already, he's eligible for a contract extension. So you need to have that in the back of your mind as well. I just don't know if the trade value that Nuggets fans want him to have is accurately there.
Well, I mean, I could tell you, like, when from the BRGM week that we did last year, I ran the Nuggets, and every single team asked about Michael Porter Jr. It is impossible to identify his trade value because that you know the ceiling, but even, I mean, this was before the bubble, so this was before, you know, he'd played barely at all last year. Like, this, he was total mystery box last year. At least this year we have slightly more of an idea of who he is and where his ceiling may lie, where, you know, is he going to reach it? Is he going to hit his floor, whatever? But yeah, you're totally right. That, you know, the closer he gets to that extension, you know, he's not going to want, he's not going to settle for like 4 years, $60 million. I'll say that. I don't know if he's going to demand a 4 year max or I'm not signing one, but he very well might. And that's something that a team needs to, you know, keep in mind if it's going to make an offer for him. So I don't know what his value is, and I think his upside will outweigh the value teams are willing to give back because they're going to say all these factors. He's inconsistent. He's nearing the extension. We're not going to give up a blue chip prospect for him, even though he is that caliber of prospect as well.
It's super weird, right, on some level, because if you just take the into account, like, Barnes and Bagley, the Nuggets would immediately get better, like right away, and significantly so, in my opinion. But ultimately, it's the long-term optimism that might prevent them from doing that because there's that fear of missing out, because you just know in the back of your head that Michael Porter Jr. might become, you know, Kevin Durant 2.0.
Right. Yeah. Well, not to go too much on a tangent, because we do need to hit a couple other teams as well, but you do raise an interesting point where Michael Porter Jr. is very publicly anti-vax. We're nearing a point where players are going to start being eligible for these vaccines in the next few months, and there are going to start being benefits to being vaccinated. Like, you know, Woj is reporting, if you're vaccinated, you're not going to need to quarantine if you have a close contact with someone who has COVID. So you won't have to miss 7 days. And, you know, I don't know what the exact timeline is going to be, but if we're at a point where anyone who wants a vaccine could get one by the start of the playoffs in late May, and there's a difference between this guy is vaccinated and we don't have to worry about him in terms of, you know, getting a severe case of COVID or close contact tracing, having to miss games, versus someone who refuses to get the vaccine, that might set up a weird market to the trade deadline too. Or like, there might be this division between, you know, it's all ethically that will be very tricky area to navigate, but it's just something to keep in the back of your mind, I guess, coming into the trade deadline, especially with someone like him.
I wonder if there are also, and this is just me speculating, I wonder if there are insurance issues as well. If you have a player who refused to get vaccinated and potentially attracts a disease that takes him out for considerable time, maybe even a full year, whatever. Like, this is not Michael Porter related, like, just generally speaking. Like, if you have that opinion that I don't want to get vaccinated for stuff, does that disqualify teams for insuring his contract, for example? Like, I would love to understand that. I would love to get someone who's in, like, the legal department or whatever of an NBA team or the league, like, on this podcast and ask them, like, what could the ramifications be?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll end this Nuggets note. So right now, sixth in the West, according to Positive Residual, second easiest remaining schedule behind only the Utah Jazz. So I think I said this, I don't remember if it was this pod or somewhere else, but if I'm placing money on an MVP bet right now, it's not on Embiid, it's on Jokic, because Jokic has higher odds, and I think they are going to move up probably to a top four seed. And I think if Jokic maintains that level of production, his odds are too high right now. He should be a co-favorite with Embiid instead of in third place.
I don't know if it was on this podcast or someone else. Okay, you know what? You're a cheating bastard. You've really committed a lot of podultry lately, by the way.
I have. I'm just trying to squeeze it all in before this kid comes up.
Oh my God, the phrasing as well. That's really bad.
I know. Okay, number four on my list, you're going to hate. I'm very excited to say it. Okay. Can you guess just based on that?
No, because when if I'm hating it, I don't, like, unlike you, I don't hate teams. I'm not sure. No, what would that be? The Houston Rockets or something? Like, no.
No, don't care about them. They're going to burn their team down. Don't care. Okay. The Washington Wizards.
Why would I hate that? That's just you being awkward and weird. So please let me know what you think is interesting about them.
The Washington Wizards were 6-17 on February 12th.
Yeah.
The Free Bradley Beal movement was possibly at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
They won five games since. They had a five-game winning streak. Then they lost to the Clippers, beat Denver, Minnesota, lost to Boston, Memphis, closed out prior to the All-Star break with a win over the Clippers. So they are now 14-20. They are only two games back of the eighth-seeded Toronto Raptors. Russell Westbrook is starting to play a lot better than the version of Russell Westbrook that we saw earlier this year.
Yeah.
I'm just intrigued to see where this Wizards team go. Like, this, they in this streak of wins, they beat Boston, they beat Denver twice, they beat Portland, they beat the Clippers and the Lakers. Like, these are not garbage teams that they're beating. These are some of the best teams in the NBA.
Yeah.
And Bradley Beal is just a phenomenal player. He's leading the league with almost 33 points a game. So he is reason alone to tune into the Wizards. But I'm genuinely curious to see if they can get, you know, they're not far out of the playoff picture right now. And it was Fred Katz and Jason Quick, I believe, of The Athletic just had a really good story the other day about the connection that Dame Lillard and Bradley Beal have. I guess when Beal was weighing whether to sign that short-term extension with the Wizards, he was talking to Dame because he's like, hey, man, I get it. All these superstars are trying to team up and win rings, and that's cool, but, like, I just want to be loyal to Washington. And I am as guilty of this as anyone for wanting him to get out and to go team up with someone and play for a contender. But it'd be super cool if the Wizards could actually just build a winner around him and reward him for his loyalty as well. So my pledge is to be better about trying to push Bradley Beal out of Washington, because it's very clear, like, his messaging has been consistent from the start. He wants to stay in Washington. He wants to win there. Like, he's getting frustrated when, you know, there were some videos of a very sad-looking Bradley Beal earlier in the season when the Wizards were just getting clobbered every night. But over the last few weeks, he's looked visibly happier, and that warms my heart as well. So I hope the Wizards can keep this up coming into the second half of the season. They got a pretty rough start. Memphis on Wednesday, then Philly, and then two against Milwaukee, a back-to-back after the Philly game on Saturday, and then one on Monday. They might get a break. I don't know if Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are going to be able to play in the Philly game because of their contact tracing issues. So maybe the Wizards get an easy win there. But, you know, they have Utah, Brooklyn, two against New York coming up later this month as well. So it's a rough start to the second half, but I think we'll get a pretty good sense of whether this pre-All-Star break momentum was a sign of them turning their season around legitimately or just, you know, a couple good weeks and they're going to go right back into the gutter.
Can I plug?
Is it something about Russell Westbrook?
No.
Oh, okay. Then no. No, go ahead.
All right, because you said that we all were having, you know, all the pieces about Bradley Beal, like everybody wanted him out there. That change, that focus has shifted onto a different Washington Wizard. Because I don't want to free Bradley Beal. I want to free Troy Brown Jr.
Yeah.
And I just wrote a piece of that on Forbes. And just today, just hours ago, a video popped up on YouTube by me also covering that subject. So, yeah, go to Forbes, read my piece on why I would free and save Troy Brown Jr. And then go to the NBA show afterwards to catch the video on it. And then finally, my last plug, months ago, I think it was a couple of months ago, I actually reiterated your point about wanting to keep Bradley Beal in Washington to see if you could build around him. Also, you can find that on my YouTube channel because I think you're right, Brian. You're absolutely right. He is so good that you need to find an avenue wherein you can retain him, build around him, and maximize his potential. His production, rather. Guy's averaging 33 points. I don't think potential is the right word. I think he's probably maxed out where he is. But yes, I totally agree with you. If there's a guy who's loyal and he's producing this manner and he wants to stay, then you're doing him a disservice by not building around him and actually giving him the chance to actually say, you know what, I want to stay here, but give me a little bit of a reason why. Just give me a few teammates I know that I can trust day in and day out for the next 3 years.
And I mean, they aren't doing that with Troy Brown, but I will say Rui Hachimura and then Denny Avdija as well. We are starting to see some more Rui than Denny, I guess, but Rui's looking good.
Yeah.
Like, Rui's a nice complimentary piece for them. I mean, it sucks that Thomas Bryant is out for the year, so, like, that's going to limit their upside. Like, I don't think, even if the Wizards get in the play-in tournament, I would be surprised if they actually made it to the playoffs, and if they do, they're going to get slaughtered by the Sixers, Nets, Bucks, whoever they face up against. But, like, for Bradley Beal's sake, it would just make me happy for the Wizards not to be a total train wreck in the second half of the year.
I agree. I actually think that they made a mistake with Moritz Wagner because they declined his four-year option.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get it with a lot of players where the fourth-year option is not picked up. I don't get it with Wagner.
Yeah, because it wasn't that expensive, right?
It wasn't, and he's actually pretty productive. Like, I understand that he's not a full-time starter or anything, but the guy on the year is averaging 7 points per game, 3 rebounds, in just 14 minutes per game and shooting 53% from the field. And last year, if memory serves, he was one of the league leaders in, was it 2-point field goal percentage or something along those lines? Like, he was, but like, okay. It just means he was efficient, you know?
Yeah.
Like he's not been a low efficiency player for his career. He's a 60% true shooting guy. Like, even, I know PER is bad, but you catch my drift here. Since joining the Wizards, his PER is 15.5, which is a little bit over average.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't get why you wouldn't pick up the fourth-year option. And I think it's those kind of margin calls that you need to do better if you actually want a sustainable product around Bradley Beal.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree there. All right, who is your last team that you are interested to watch in the second half? You can only watch these five teams, of course.
Oh, damn it. Okay. No, it's the New Orleans Pelicans.
Oh, nice. Good one.
Yeah. And look, Lonzo Ball has been balling. I'm sorry. he really has. He's been good. He's been a lot better. You know, we had Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg on, and they just... they were harsh. Poor Lonzo took a beating. And
he really did.
Since those guys were on, it seems like he listened and shaped up because he's been playing really well. His 3-point field goal percentage is almost at 39, of course, but that's on almost 8 attempts per game. He's just looking more confident. Zion might have the best shot selection in all of basketball, and I'm not saying that as a joke. I mean that. This is a, 20 or 21? 20? I don't even know. Yeah, it doesn't matter. 20 or 21. He's 20. For a 20-year-old to understand your own limitations, to understand where you're most effective, and to just keep going to that avenue because teams can't stop you from doing so, that's high intelligence basketball. The guy is shooting 61% from the field.
Yep.
61.5, actually.
Yep.
And he's getting everything he wants around the basket. That to me is just ridiculous. And then, of course, you have Brandon Ingram, who I think has really flown under the radar this year for whatever reason. He's just solid. He's like 24 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2.5 triples per night, almost 89 from the line. You can have him as like your secondary playmaker. He can do stuff off the bounce. You can play him also moving off the basketball. I just think he's got one of the most versatile offensive games from NBA wings in the NBA. And like, he's only 23 years old, and nobody seems to really be talking about it, which I find very odd. I'm just curious to see what these guys can do. Even if they completely flame out, I don't care. I just want to see them progress individually and like take these steps every single game.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I mean, also, they are a team to watch heading into the trade deadline. As you said, it sounds like Lonzo, I don't think they would like totally rule out moving him if a team offered multiple first round picks for him, but he has been playing well enough that I don't think they're as desperate to offload him as they might have been earlier in the year.
Yeah,
but
they're not going to take Lauri Markkanen, is what you're saying, which we thought a couple months back.
Not without at least one or two picks attached, yeah.
I agree.
JJ Redick, I think, is still very much up for the taking, or he might be a buyout candidate if not, or if he doesn't get moved by the deadline. Eric Bledsoe, I don't think factors into their long-term plans either, so he is certainly a name to watch at the deadline as well, especially for teams that are looking for a point guard. And then we could see some of the, you know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Kyra Lewis get more minutes if some of those guys get moved, which would make them, the Pelicans, it might lead them to struggle and for them to fall out of the playoff picture, but it'd be more entertaining to watch because we're getting to see, all right, what is this next iteration of Pelicans basketball going to look like?
Right.
Yeah, they're a good call.
I'm just excited about them. I think there's so much upside there. You also have Jackson Hayes in the wings. Like, it's just, you know, we were always looking at them as like a long-term play, and for some reason, a lot of people are disappointed with what they've done this year, where I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like, they weren't supposed to be good yet. And I understand there are 6 games under 500, but that's more or less where I kind of expected them to be. I don't think they've disappointed on the court. I think they're super duper young. Like, what kind of unrealistic expectations are you putting on this team if you expect them to make the playoffs?
Like, you can't lose Drew Holiday and get better. Right. Which is not like they
that's
traded
super
Drew
simple,
Holiday,
but
from...
it's absolutely right. Yes.
You traded Drew Holiday for multiple picks, which were the main prize of this. And then you also got Eric Bledsoe and you got George Hill and you sent him to OKC, you got Steven Adams. So, like, you're trying to bridge the gap and stay competitive so you're not like process Sixers in here. You know, they're not trying to be the worst team in the league, but Drew Holiday was one of their best players last year, and now they don't have him. So what did you expect was going to happen? Eric Bledsoe, despite the, you know, the commentary about that trade, Drew Holiday is a big upgrade over Eric Bledsoe.
Yep.
And that's actually a good seg into my last team, which is the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, good call.
I don't understand why they're flying under the radar. I think it's just last season.
That's only
I think it is, and you know, they've been by far regular season record best team in the East, best team in the NBA, I believe, for the last couple years. So I think that also colored some perception of what was going on. You know, they lost 5 straight games in February as well. They fell to 16-13. It was just like, what's going on with this team? Like, why are they just so mediocre? Well, for one, Drew Holiday missed a number of games so far this year. He's missed 10, I believe, and he's come off the bench for a couple since his return. Like, he's just not playing as much as what I think they expect him to do in the playoffs, certainly. And it's similar to like the Marcus Smart thing. When Marcus Smart went down, all of a sudden Boston really started struggling. When Drew Holiday went down, all of a sudden you don't have, you know, one of your main guys in your roster. What do you think is going to happen with the Bucks? But they have six of seven heading into the All-Star break. And I think they're just kind of, they seem like they are more willing to experiment this year in the regular season than they have been in years past, to the detriment of their regular season record. But isn't this exactly what we've been wanting them to do for the last couple of years? Like, yeah. Cool. They won, you know, you're on a 70-win pace for most of last season. Great. You lost in the second round and everyone's calling for Mike Budenholzer's head. So you're asking, you know, the whole commentary coming out of last season was the Bucks need to be more flexible, adjust more, be more willing to experiment during the regular season so they can throw different looks at opponents in the playoffs. They know this Giannis downhill style works, but they also need counterpunches if teams build a wall and stop Giannis from doing that. Adding Drew Holiday is certainly a help. You know, Chris Middleton is just still really good, even though he didn't make it to the All-Star game inexplicably. Mm-hmm. I think this Bucks team is a legit threat in the East, and no one is talking about them. So I'm excited to see if Giannis in particular takes that personally and goes on a mission in the second half of the season just to destroy everyone and remind people, yeah, like, hey, the East is not just the Sixers and the Bucks or the Nets. Like, we're here too, guys.
Yep. I completely share those sentiments. I think it's a mistake to rule out the Bucks. And, you know, to our credit, we never jumped that wagon, I think. We understood it. But, of course, there are still some doubts that persist when it comes to playoff success, because Mike Budenholzer is still there. But you're right. He's doing exactly what everyone wanted in terms of trying to diversify his offensive sets. And, yes, does that mean that maybe they've lost, I don't know, a couple of games that they should have won? Big whoop. They're still 25-11. You know, I mean, most teams would kill for that record.
Yeah.
So I'm just not worried at all. Let me put it this way. The one thing that I am worried about for the Bucks is Giannis's free throw percentage. That's it. Mm. That's it.
Yeah. And, I mean, Giannis in his last 20 games, this is dating back to the end of January, averaging 30.5 points on 56.4% shooting, 12.5 rebounds, 6.3 assists, 1.7 steals, 1.7 blocks, 1.4 steals, double checking. Yes, all of those are higher than what he did in his MVP season last year. Now, he is playing more minutes. He's averaging 34 on the season compared to only 30.4 last year. And in this 20-game stretch, he's at 35.2. So, you know, that is certainly inflating some of his production. But He's still, like, you said it well earlier this episode. He should be in the MVP discussion, and it's wild that he is not because of voter fatigue, holding the playoffs against him, whatever. Like, I mean, it's honestly good for the Bucks. Like, I'm sure they're thrilled that they're flying under the radar. And, it, you know, a lot of it is because Giannis signed the Supermax, so we didn't have to deal with when they were 16 and 13. Oh my God, what does this mean? Is Giannis mad? Is he checking out? Because you know that would have been the narrative.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure it would have been. Of course.
But now that he signed, it's just like, okay, we're gonna tune this team out in the regular season, yep. Even though they've had the best record in the league for the last 2 years. We'll check back with them in the playoffs, see if they learned anything. I mean, again, there's no way for them to answer those questions in the next 30 games, but I'm certainly interested to see if they continue experimenting or how they manage that balance over the second half of the season of we do want to be a top seed. We do want home court advantage for X number of rounds in the playoffs, but also we're looking at the Nets, we're looking at the Sixers, Celtics, whoever. We need to figure out how we can beat them with multiple styles.
Yep, I agree. And the fact that they have Drew now also just gives some different looks, especially as someone who can slash the basket with size. That's not to take anything away from Bledsoe, who could do the same, but he was 6'1". Drew is like 6'4". He can go up against bigger guards. He can finish better around bigger guys. So I think that's an element that you can go into as well. They haven't really used that a whole lot. Like, I understand why people, you know, who are mostly box score surfing, look at Drew Holiday and go, what's all the fuss about? Like 15.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, 5.1 assists. Like, on the surface of it, that looks very pedestrian. But that doesn't really show you the defense. That doesn't show you the savvy. It doesn't show you the on-court intelligence. It doesn't show you just how freaking huge he actually is. Like, that's a big dude. Like, he's got that Luka Doncic syndrome, where when you watch him play on TV, it's like, oh, okay. But, you know, you hear everyone who's, like, been next to him. It's like, that guy is huge. Like, he's super puffed. And look, Drew Holiday, big-ass guy as well. So he can absorb that contact.
Yeah. Any other teams that you want to give just a, like, one-sentence shout-out to?
The Knicks. Yes, I mean, keep doing what you're doing. The not panicking free agency was extremely clever. And someone had a piece out today on the Knicks. It was really good.
Yaron Weitzman?
There we go. Yes, thank you. Thank you. He had a piece out on the Knicks today about like their offseason moves. And it was about Emmanuel Quickley and how there was actually disagreements within, but they kind of found their way. Super interesting to read. And I think they might have solved what was bugging them for practically 20 season, which was they now have a front office where you have different opinions, but they're being respected one another. Like, you're respecting each other's opinions, and you're actually trying to gather a ton of different perspectives to make the best decision based on the research that's conducted by each individual. Yeah, that's smart. Every team does that, but the Knicks didn't for so many years that now that they do, I'm super surprised and I'm happy for him.
Yeah, definitely check out your own pieces on the New York Post. There's a surprise Sam Hinkie reference in there for the Sixers fans out there, which is great. Three other teams very quickly. Utah Jazz for me. I'm just excited to see if they can keep doing what they've been doing and if the All-Star draft snubs motivate them even more. Charlotte Hornets, LaMelo factor, enough said. Atlanta Hawks, how they respond to the Lloyd Pierce firing. And, you know, hopefully we see a fully healthy Hawks team because they are also right in that. But, like, there are going to be good teams in the East that miss the play-in tournament. And I'm excited to see how that bracket shakes out as well. All right, well, that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you, as always, for listening. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store to be a part of our podcast. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. And just a quick note to our Danish listeners, of which there are many. We are aware that you have been listening to the same ad approximately 8 to 10 times per episode recently. I have sent an email to our podcast host, and I am hoping to get that sorted immediately. In the meantime, I hope that you'll survive, maybe in the coming episodes as well. I don't think this is handled just within the next couple of days. So please stay on the line, so to speak, and listen. And I apologize in advance, and I'll try to have it sorted as quickly as possible.
Good now. All right. Later, man.
Later, man.